Hello and welcome to Keanu Club, like a cool breeze over the mountains. This is episode 55, A Scanner Darkly from 2006. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
Back with us from a couple episodes ago, we have Jordan Paul and Clark. Hi, Jordan.
Hey.
Now, before we get into this, we have to take another little bit of a detour in our ongoing effort to get to the movies quicker and to skip all of the short films and documentaries. We skipped two more things since Constantine. We skipped Echo, which is like a 10 or 12 minute really weird black and white short film that's on YouTube that I skimmed through pretty quickly and didn't see Keanu, so I think that's probably fine to skip. And we also skipped The Great Warming, a documentary that Mike watched.
Yeah, and the only reason I watched this was because I had to tape it for you to watch, because it
yep,
only...
I have it on VHS now.
Yeah, I think it only exists in DVD form in Region 2, so I got it off of Amazon Canada, actually, which I thought was kind of funny, because it's not only is it narrated by Keanu, but Alanis Morissette as well. And it's basically your garden variety documentary about the environment you might watch in high school science class on a day where the teacher's sort of ahead in the lesson plan. That's really what it felt like to me. And you only see Keanu and Alanis at the very beginning. They introduce themselves and introduce the documentary, and then you just hear them alternating facts the entire time while watching footage of the environment. And it's very boring. I'm glad you don't have to watch it. I watched it for us and for everyone else. It's a hard pass. There's just no telling Keanu in it. He's just reading, so you don't really get a sense of performance or anything. So that was a skip.
Well, I'm glad that once again you took another bullet for the team, because I just don't want to, like, that. I'm so glad that we're getting through this quicker, because when we were looking down the barrel of, like, 12 documentaries over 3 or 4 months, I was just like, I just can't.
Yeah, I mean, after watching it, I was like, wow, I really don't know what we would have talked about for this episode. Like, it would have been the shortest episode in history for real. Because literally, like, what I just said about it is all I really feel there is to need to discuss about it.
But this one has a lot to talk about, even though I'm not really sure how to talk about it, because it's a weird movie to take notes on. It's a Richard Linklater movie, who also did Boyhood, and he did Dazed and Confused, he did Everybody Wants Some, he did the Before trilogy, he did Waking Life, he did all sorts of movies. This is Keanu after The Matrix, in a movie that kind of feels Matrix-y in ways. It's Robert Downey Jr. right before Iron Man, and it's Woody Harrelson. I don't know. What's Woody Harrelson known for? White Men Can't Jump in Zombieland? Like, is that like, this is just in the middle of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Until he started training Katniss, I guess that's what he was
known
for. And Woody from Cheers,
in the downslope or the, not the rough spot of his career, but just, I don't know what else he's doing in 2006, so he might as well be in an animated movie.
He became kind of a character actor, I guess, at some point in some ways, like just showed up in small roles here and there. Yeah, but here he is. He's good in this. Everyone's pretty good in this.
It's weird to watch this movie for Keanu, considering Keanu is kind of the straight man in this, and Robert Downey Jr. and Woody Harrelson are so weird by comparison, and also that much more entertaining. And I know Keanu's got, like, the real narrative and the real things that happen to him, but in terms of enjoyment, Robert Downey just steals this movie in terms of being fun and weird and, you know, exactly the same kind of character he is. Like, he's basically Tony Stark if Tony Stark was a drug addict in an animated world.
He's like if someone like shook up Tony Stark.
I feel like he's just playing himself as a drug addict. Like, because at this time, like, he was kind of, his career was really down because of his drug use. Like, he went to prison, he was waking up in strange people's bedrooms. Like, it was really, it seemed like it was getting really bad at one point, and no one would touch him, and he wasn't really making high profile films. And this kind of feels like, yeah, it's like right before Iron Man, it almost feels like a part of his comeback trail in a bit. And he seems very close to this material. Like, I totally buy him in this.
I had a hard time following this because, like, I had seen it before, so I knew that Keanu was kind of the protagonist of the film, but, like, especially in the beginning of the movie, you actually spend more time with Robert Downey Jr. and Woody Harrelson, which is kind of off-putting because this was the second time I had seen this, and the first time I saw it, I think even then I had, like, you have the sense that they're not the meat of the story. You actually don't get the meat of the story until the last 10 minutes of this movie, which I find really hard to follow, and the way that this is animated doesn't help.
Yeah, what do you guys think about this animation style? The rotoscoping, obviously, like they filmed these guys live in the place and animated over it. But I feel like this was something that, this was a style that was being toyed with a little. Linkletter used it in Waking Life.
Waking Life, yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like this was on the cusp of being used a lot. I like this style, and I was looking forward to seeing more animated films use it, but it just kind of fell off.
Well, I think part of that is because they filmed this movie in 23 days, and then it took 18 months to animate.
Wow. Okay.
And it's just an unsustainable strategy, I feel, because
rotoscoping is it's one frame at a time. I mean, that's insane.
I almost felt like they developed some kind of program to do a chunk at once or some kind. But I hear what you're saying. I just felt like you could literally film it in any place and draw the set that you wanted or the clothing that you needed for the character or the lighting and everything. So I was watching this going, oh, this seems like a pretty good way to shoot a movie. You don't have to worry about your set or your dressing and you can put it all in after, but it seems like it's extremely time consuming.
This is a good fit for this movie, though, for like practical reasons, but also for kind of story reasons. Like, you know, they have the scramble suit, which, like, I don't know, how else would you have done that?
You couldn't, I don't think.
It looks great. And they have all that bug stuff, which, like, it's not really prominent. Like, it's in the beginning, the guy's covered in bugs and he's scratching them off. And then later in the movie, Keanu is hallucinating and everybody turns into bugs. But again, that stuff is important and would have looked weird had this not been animated. I think they could have done it, but I think this was a smart way to do it. You have a different relationship with looking at a character who's not just animated, but like we know who these real actors are. So it's like we're looking at somebody who's kind of a real person and kind of not a real person. And this is a movie about drug addiction, and that really seems to fit the theme.
Yeah, and what also, just as a quick side note, another thing that rotoscoping does is that it is able to cover up all the post-it notes of his lines that Robert Downey Jr. had all over every set that they were in. Like, he just had notes everywhere. I mean, there's one movie that came out a year or two ago, and I don't remember why I can't remember it, but Hannibal Buress is like a cockroach in the back of a convertible. Do you know what movie I'm talking about?
Huh. No.
Hold on. Hannibal Buress.
I want to know what you're talking about, though.
Cockroach. So it's some movie that came out in the last year or two that they're just really high on something, and then all of a sudden Hannibal is in the backseat. Doesn't look like Hannibal at all, just looks like a giant bug, but it has Hannibal's voice, and Hannibal's a very specific, deliberate voice and inflection. So if you know what he sounds like, you can tell that it's him. But that's like what they would have had to do if they didn't have this rotoscoping. And what I like about the rotoscoping is that who knows what the future tech will hold. But I feel like you can watch this movie 10 years ago or today or 10 years from now or however long, and it's still going to look cool because it's so different from so many things that it's hard to compare it to anything. Like, it's not like you're really comparing early Pixar movies to Toy Story 3. That kind of animation has come so far, and we talked about that, I think, with John, when we talked about the Animatrix, about like how there's like that weightlessness with the Animatrix animation back into the early 2000s, late 90s. Here, I think that this is so unique that there's a timeless quality to it because there's not many things like this, and it's always going to sort of look cool and original, and it has this timeless effect to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that really helps, like, to sort of craft this specific world, you know? Like, this is a world where everyone that we meet are high on drugs, like, all the time. Like, not just high, but, like, addicted. And so, and also that combined with, you can tell that it's Keanu talking, whereas maybe in an animated feature, you just recognize the voice, but it's like, you know, he's drawn as a lion or something. So I think, like, somewhat recognizing them and then feeling that we're submerged in this weird world unto itself really does give off a unique vibe that I don't get off any other film. It makes its point with the animation. Like, it just doesn't feel like they're doing it to be cool and look how cool it is, but like there's an actual point to it looking this way also, which just enhances everything about it. That they just didn't do it because they thought it looked cool. It actually services the story in a way.
I have a question for you guys, because I kind of said before, you don't really have the full picture of what this movie is and what the story is until the very end. There's a lot of stuff that you find out that really makes it so that you're actually watching a whole different movie than you thought you were watching in a lot of ways. But I feel like we were supposed to be watching Keanu go through not a big transformation, but a transformation. He's a guy who's falling into drug addiction, and he's becoming bad at his job, and he's losing his mind, he's forgetting things. And I feel like the one-note acting of Keanu Reeves doesn't work for that. The guy who he is at the end when he goes to rehab and he's in the field feels to me like the same guy who was in the beginning of the movie. You know, he's a little different, but it didn't feel like a big enough change for me. I had a hard time with it.
Yeah, I've seen this movie a couple times now, actually, and I actually like it less every time, just as regarding the plot or the story and everything, because I agree, like, it makes you sort of think it's one movie, and then at the end it's like, oh no, at least this time it really sunk in that it's something else entirely. We'd lead you to believe that Keanu is this undercover cop who's becoming addicted to this drug and is losing his mind, or he's suffering from the effects, like he's losing his sense of his self, and his whole thing is he has to spy on himself. You know, he's a cop, but people don't know what he looks like, so he's just told to spy on himself and see what he does. And so I feel like it wants to be like this introspective look on this drug addict and his life and where he was and what it's turned into and how it's been destroyed. But I don't really get the weight of all that, especially at the end when it's revealed that he's sort of just this patsy. That really sort of came more out of nowhere this time, where I was like, wow, this isn't what I felt the movie was going towards. And it just felt like it took like a left turn towards the end there.
See, I like the left turn because I feel like I couldn't connect to the characters or understand what world they were in. And I think that was on purpose because it's their, like, kind of drug addicted world. And they don't know where they are and what we're doing, and neither do we. So I think that was purposeful, but it's hard to watch. And then at the end, when it's revealed that basically, who does he work for?
Well, he works for the police department.
Yeah, I guess like the police department got him addicted on purpose so they could send him to rehab, because the police department has this theory that the rehab center is growing and distributing the drug, which they are.
Which they're right, but they just don't have a way to prove it.
But
yeah.
So they used Keanu to get him in there to continue to go undercover, even though he has no idea. And once we find all that out and we're like in the perspective of the people who are not high on drugs, we're with Winona Ryder and that other cop, it feels like a different movie. And all of a sudden, I felt the whole weight of like what they had just done to this person and what was happening to all these people. Like, I bawled at the end of this. It's so emotional when he picks up the flower and he's like, what does he say? I want to say it right, because I love, like, that's when I really, really started to cry. A present for my friends at Thanksgiving.
I saw death rising from the earth and the ground itself in one blue field. A present for my friends at Thanksgiving.
It's so innocent, and also he's gonna get them. Like, you know, I don't know.
Do you think, though? I mean, that's the hopeful ending, but that there's also like a real depressing ending that he never recovers.
Well, I think he's gonna get them because he does see the flowers again. He couldn't see them, then he could, so he was sort of right on the edge, and it felt like Winona said, like his instincts sort of kicked in, and he still knows deep down that he's a cop on a mission or something. But
yeah, but I don't think he's ever gonna recover. That's what's so sad about it.
No, I think he's scrambled for good at the end. And I mean, I did feel that much more like earlier viewings. This time, I guess I wish there was more of that earlier, like more of like maybe the new path, which is the rehab facility, like maybe they're the ones in on it actually making the drugs. There's little side references to wars going on in plantations in South America, and like there seems to be a bigger conspiracy happening. But I guess the point is how oblivious the main players are within the world that they're inhabiting too. So maybe all that being in the background and the reveal coming so late is part of the point too.
I think this is definitely a movie that would work better or maybe have more meaning. Maybe you wouldn't cry as hard the second time or at all, but I feel like if you remembered what the ending was and you rewatched this movie, it would make more sense, and I think there'd be more to it. I saw this movie like 8 or 9 years ago, and I didn't remember anything about it other than the art style, and I wish that I had remembered more going in so that I could have watched it differently.
Yeah, I saw it when it came out like 10 or 11 years ago, and halfway through, like when Keanu and Winona are together and she's like pushing him off and pushing him off, that's when I remembered that she was also an undercover cop. So that made the rest of the movie way more exciting to watch. But I kind of forgot what happened to him and how bad it was.
One thing I liked knowing this time around was that not only is she an undercover cop, but she's the superior officer interviewing him the entire movie behind
she's
the other...
Hank.
Yeah, she's Hank behind the shift suit. So, like, I liked watching it this time knowing that's Winona Ryder's character interrogating Archer, knowing that Keanu is Archer and egging him on to investigate himself and to go even crazier. Like, that I felt worked a lot. That worked the best this time around for me.
It also, like Thumbsucker, made me want to read the book.
I feel read this book.
Was it good? Like, I feel like you couldn't be so disconnected from the book as I felt from the movie the whole time.
It's really close from what I remember. There's a little more in the book actually about the new path possibly being connected to the drug and it being, you know, I think you're in on the scheme a little earlier than you are in the movie, but for the most part I remember it being incredibly faithful to the book. Like, there's the conversation about the 18 speed bike, you know, that scene, I mean, that when they're in the car and the brakes are going out, like, I just remember all these sort of little episodes from the book, because I would imagine that a lot of them are based off of real life, because a lot of this Philip K. Dick based on his actual friends and their situations with hardcore drug abuse.
What also is probably not in the book is what might be my favorite line in the movie, where they're talking about Leonardo DiCaprio, that old Leonardo DiCaprio movie, Catch Me If You Can, and then that was before he got into his Elvis phase. And I was like, oh man, I want that phase so bad. Like, I want a bunch of movies where Leonardo DiCaprio plays Elvis. Like, that's great. I want that so bad.
I just kept thinking of Fat DiCaprio, because when Elvis got older, he just got fatter, and then it made me want Fat Keanu, and then it just reminded me of all of that disappointment during that phase of Keanu Club. Yeah, the Fat Leo, or the Leo and the Elvis phase.
Was there a Fat Keanu?
There were three different movies. There was one movie where he was heavier because he got hurt playing hockey and gained weight. And then there was a two-movie thing, The Watcher and The Gift, where I had been lied to by multiple people in the months leading up to it, that Fat Keanu movies, and he's not fat as just big and intimidating and scary. And so, not that I want to see, like, a movie star gain. I mean, although, on Sunny, like, when Mac got fat, like, it was funny. Like, I want to see Keanu do that. I mean, I don't think that he's going to, because nobody else has said anything from here on out, but I was promised Fat Keanu and just never happened, so I want fat versions of everybody now.
How old is he?
Now?
Yeah.
He's 52. He's the same age as Cage. He's a couple months younger than Cage.
I was just thinking, you see it happen to so many celebrity men. Just like one day they wake up and they are like double the width that they used to be. But I guess it hasn't happened to, well, either one of them yet, really.
Yeah, they sort of have the advantage of being like taller, leaner to begin with, guys. I felt like the Cage beefed up for his action trilogy. But
I think we're far more likely to have Fat Cage than Fat Keanu.
Yeah, Keanu actually seems like he's getting in better shape.
Yes. I feel like Cage in some of his later movies has, as sort of like old man, like in Snowden and stuff, doesn't necessarily, he's not like a, I mean, not that he really has been for a while, but like he's not a sex symbol anymore. People aren't going to see him for like what he looks like. He's not the star of these action movies or all the, you know, he's still the star of some of them, whatever. But he can let himself go a little bit. And I feel like we are probably a few years of bad luck away from that Cage. And I mean, not that I want to see it, but I do want to see it.
I want to see it, but I want it to be necessary. I just don't want him to walk through a movie, you know, having gained a lot of weight. I want him to play someone where he needed to gain the weight. He would have been interesting in this movie. I could have seen Cage really been a part of that inner circle, maybe the Woody Harrelson role. I don't know.
Sure.
I was getting some Cage vibes off of Woody at points.
So can we talk about how this movie is kind of like a Matrix side story? Like, I feel like this is an Animatrix story fleshed out to a full 2 hours. And here's why. Well, aside from the fact that when he's talking, he sounds like he has the same cadence and delivery as he does at the end of the Matrix movies.
When he's, like, on the phone talking to the computers and he's like, I'm going to tell them what you don't want them to see. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also feel like just that the twist of Keanu, whether he would, like, did he volunteer? Was he forced in? Is there destiny? Is there free will? Did he take the blue pill? Did he take the red pill? The fact that these flowers are blue and you take the blue flowers that become the red. I mean, I guess it is a red pill, so that might debunk my theory a little bit. But the blue flowers put you in this dream world and you're not awake. You're not with it. I just saw it because it's a whole thing about sort of like dreaming. He even says to Winona at one point, doesn't he? Like, we're all dreaming. None of this is real. So it's not exactly Matrix-y, but, you know, considering last episode on Constantine, we talked about how Warner was still in the Matrix business and the Keanu business, this feels like a similar, like there are parallels to be drawn here between Matrix themes and storylines and plot points and what's going on here, especially because it's all weird and surreal and the nature of free will and dreaming and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's the definite questioning of reality is for sure like a big part of this movie, and you know, questioning yourself and who you are and what, and yeah, absolutely. I was picking up on similar themes and vibes there for this movie for sure.
Did this movie remind anybody of Inherent Vice?
I could see a little of the Inherent Vice thing going on with the drug-related mystery background plot.
What made me think about it, aside from the whole drug thing, was that one scene where they're talking about the bike, where he's saying the 18-speed bike, and they're saying, like, no, you know, there's only nine speeds. No, there's only six speeds. He's like, we gotta go find, like, the missing cases. Like, that felt like something that Doc would investigate because he's way too high.
Why do you say it's an 18-speed when it only has nine gears?
What?
Yeah. Six right here, three at the other end of the chain. Six plus three equals nine. It's a nine-speed bike.
Yeah, but even a nine-speed bike for $50, you still got a good deal.
Okay, those guys told me it was 18 speeds. I just got griefed. I just got...
Wait. Now I count eight. Six here, and then two in the front. That makes eight.
What do you think happened to the missing gears?
Think? I know. They were probably working on it, these gypsy grifters, with improper tools and no technical knowledge, no understanding of reverse engineering. And when they attempted to reassemble it, they panicked. They got scared and they left nine orphan gears. They're just laying on the floor. They're probably still there on the floor of the garage.
Let's just go rescue the orphan gears, dude.
Don't you see that that's part of the plan? They're going to try to sell them to me, not give them to me as they rightfully should have, as included in part of the original sale price. Oh, my God, there's no telling what else they've... bait and switched.
Yeah, but if all of us go together, oh, they'll give them back. Oh, you bet they will. Oh, you bet they will. Let's just go as a team, okay?
Wait.
But, you know, it's just all nonsense, and, like, they think that they're these detectives that are going to solve the day, but spoiler alert for Inherent Vice, in the end of the day, like, nothing he did mattered. It was all just gonna work itself out anyway, and it was all just a big cover-up, and so these three stoners, there's no missing gears, there's no missing speeds, it's just that there was a stolen bike that he got lied to, but he still got a hot bike for $50.
One could argue Doc made things worse going out on his little mission during Inherent Vice. But
yes, very much so.
For here, like, I really like these little sort of, like, episodic, well, these little episodes between these drugged out guys, because I really feel like it captures their insane logic in a way. It almost got me believing them from time to time, like when Robert Downey Jr. is talking about making cocaine by aerosol spraying into a balloon and putting it in the freezer and the crystals rise to the top. It's like, I know that's not possible, but the way he explains it makes me believe him.
Right.
So I got a lot of that out of this movie. Like, I really feel like Linkletter knew the tone to go for and hit it and kept it and was able to really augment it. Like, you could get, like, the low sort of melancholy drugged out versions with Keanu, and then you get those manic versions with Downey and everything, you know, but it all feels connected and, like, natural. Like, it all feels like it belongs together.
I feel like there's two or three different movies here. Like, we have what could have been funny, and actually this ties into what I was thinking before. Hannibal Buress as a bug is in The Nice Guys. When they're driving down the road,
okay,
and Gosling and Russell Crowe in the front, and then he's just in the back. And in a way, it's not quite, because this is more drug-heavy than that, but the Robert Downey, Woody Harrelson stuff feels kind of Nice Guys-y. Like, that's one type of story. Then we have the depressing drug, for lack of a better comparison, sort of like a Train-Spotting kind of thing. And then you have this whole cop criminal thing running throughout, and sort of three different stories that I feel like work well together, but watching it this time, not remembering how it ended, the Keanu stuff is so depressing, and the cop stuff feels, until like the end, sort of feels like shoehorned in, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't necessarily feel like it fits, and ultimately it does wrap up, but I wanted more of like Robert Downey Jr. and Woody Harrelson just shooting the shit, like talking about cars. Like, I wanted those characters in a movie like Dazed and Confused, where we're just hanging out with them and they're just fixing cars and just making fun of each other. Like, that's kind of what I wanted for a while, until it wraps up and then you sort of, you know, they kind of go, like, when the movie gets going and the movie gets real and, like, real stuff starts to happen, they kind of go away and it becomes all about Keanu and Winona.
Well, I feel like they don't go away as much as they it changes because Robert Downey Jr. starts to, he keeps going into the cops to kind of narc on Keanu. So I feel like we start to see him differently.
Yeah, I mean, I started wondering why would he incriminate this guy he lives with? He's just going to incriminate himself. But then I came around to thinking like, oh, like he keeps saying Keanu's like this terrorist or part of a terrorist cell when in fact Downey is the one being suspected of that. So it's kind of like the thing of blame the other person for something you've done to throw them off the trail a little bit or something. So that's kind of what I was getting at with Downey. And then I was like, oh, he's being very duplicitous. And yeah, from that moment on, I was sort of watching him more because there's that other scene where he almost lets Woody Harrelson die, right? Like choked to death on the floor. So you're like, this dude is not who he says he is. There's something else going on. We're not going to find out what it is, but I feel like you're supposed to be aware that out of everybody, he is indeed the one to watch that is the most dangerous. He kind of goes from in the beginning to like, oh, look how fun and like funny and like, wouldn't it be fun to hang out with this guy on drugs? And then to like, I don't even want to be near this guy when we're sober.
The Robert Downey Jr. character is, he's hard to describe because he's kind of a rat, but kind of not. And I don't know what kind of like weird middle ground. He does seem dangerous. The Woody Harrelson just seems like a genuine sweetheart, dopey kind of guy. And we know Keanu's story, but Robert Downey just like exists in this like this gray space between them. You're right. Like it's tough to really pinpoint who he is.
I think that's like kind of the point though. Like, does he even know? Because, like, he's also, like, doing a lot of drugs. He just happens to be the kind of guy who's a lot scarier than the other guys.
Right. Yeah, that is the point, though, right? That he is this... I guess that's a lie, though, that they were saying that they're ramping up security to get him, but they're just really trying to get Keanu. I don't... It's all... Oh, man. Like, it's hard to tell who knows what in this movie at what time. Because I guess you're supposed to know that the cops know everything. They know who Keanu is. They know who's in that shifting suit. That they know it's him. And they're just trying to make him think that they're not after him, that they're after Robert Downey. But you also, like, don't know definitively. I mean, it's probably, I don't know you know definitively that everybody knows. Winona knows.
Yeah, no, they all know because at the end, she's talking about how purposeful it was. It was all super on purpose. They used him, like, and, you know, got him addicted to drugs. It was all part of the plan, I feel like.
Yeah, even the guilt, right, at the end when she's like, no one forced the pills into your mouth. It's like, well, yeah, they did. Like, this was all an elaborate ruse to get Keanu even deeper undercover into the rehab plant. I feel like all this stuff about, you know, they were really looking for Downey is like the cover plan or whatever. It's like, we want Archer to go and be part of this little cell and see if there's anything there because we're suspecting this guy, Barris, in the crew. But what they really want is just to get Keanu's character undercover, addicted to drugs, in the state of mind of substance D, so that they could bring him into a rehab. Which is why I feel like at times it is a little confusing as to like, why is this, what's going on? Like, why are we spending so much time analyzing or debriefing Keanu and all this? And I think it is all part of the point to get the viewer a little more disoriented, expect certain things that aren't going to happen, and then have things happen that are logical but unforeseeable to a certain extent, so that you are caught off guard in a way that is similar to the character.
Yep.
I mean, it's all just one big crazy trip of a movie, right? Like, when it comes down to it, it does get very morose at points, but, you know, drug addiction is a very heavy issue, so I feel like that's okay. It can do that. And then it has, like, those really fun, entertaining moments of what you want to see people on drugs in movies acting like. You know, it gives you sort of the fictional fun part, too. Not entirely fictional, but, I mean, it shows you the fun. But it definitely doesn't stray from the consequences, right? Because, like, this is a very, you know, it is meant to be a heartbreaking ending to this guy. Like, this guy who was just chewed up and used by a drug for other people's purposes, and it happens every day.
The story is set up to be depressing, that we're like, we're only 7 years into the future, I think, so it's not that far off, and there's a drug that 20% of the population is addicted to, and there's basically no recovering from. So not only is Keanu's story depressing, but the entire landscape, the overall story is depressing too.
Yeah, that was one thing that didn't sink in until this time too, is like, just about everybody you meet that isn't an authority figure is probably on substance D. You know, maybe even some of the cops, too. It's like everybody's going crazy.
Do you think, like, I kept finding myself thinking how much more depressing this probably would have been if it wasn't animated?
And they could probably do that now with the extent of CGI and all that, but I think it would be Yeah, it would be too depressing. Like, I kind of think you need the visual disconnect from our world to sort of absorb this type of story to make it not feel real at times.
Can we talk about, and this might have been, this is changing gears for a second, this might have been a lie. I don't think it was, although maybe, who knows really. But this movie paints Keanu as a type of character that we haven't seen much, surprisingly, and that's Dad Keanu.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to think of all the other movies that we've done, and the only other one I can remember for sure that he had kids is another episode Jordan was on, Parenthood.
Yeah, at the very end.
Oh, yes, barely, yeah. He kind of
but
had
that's, but I mean, that's the point of it, right? Because, like, yes, she gets pregnant, so they get married. Was he a dad in The Gift? I don't think so, right?
No.
And The Devil's Advocate? Or no?
No.
You're not there yet, but wasn't he the dad in some scary movie? Wasn't he a dad? Yeah, Knock Knock.
He's not a dad. Is he a dad?
I watched, I watched the beginning and he seemed like a dad.
Well, he's definitely a husband in that, and his wife goes away. I don't remember if there's a family or not.
I'm starting to think Dad Keanu is like Fat Keanu. It's just a myth.
Well, because I was comparing it to Cage, and we had, I mean, Cage wasn't always a dad, but he was a dad in like The Family Man and Stolen. I feel like maybe part of this is because Keanu was a high schooler for so long. And unless you do that high school pregnancy movie, you're not going to, like, that's not going to be part of it. You know what I mean? And then he was Ted for so long, and Ted's never going to be a dad. And then he's been
well,
like,
Ted is
the other...
a dad, actually. At the end of that movie, he has little Bill.
Yeah, so. I guess. That barely counts, but you're right.
I know.
And then, like, the rest of his career pretty much is this, like, either stoner guy or an athlete or a buttoned-up police officer kind of guy. And, like, none of them are just archetypically dad types either. So it's just strange that we're 55 episodes in, and he's been really, like, a dad has been prominent in, like, now maybe just Parenthood. Like, it's not important here, and it might not even be accurate here. Like, he might not be married with kids. That might be the drugs warping his brain.
Right. And we only do get that one scene, but what a great domestic scene that sets the. I bought him in that moment as that dad, you know, with the two daughters. He goes into the kitchen and he bumps his head on the cabinet. It seemed natural. It seemed like a natural fit for him. And if I could tell just in that quick moment, then I can tell, like, I want a movie where he is just straight up, like, legitimate the dad, like, in a rom-com or just in some kind of, it could be a drama. I don't care. But, like, I do want to see him with a family, like, playing the dad, talking to his daughter's boyfriend, whatever. I need that Keanu now that we've mentioned it.
Well, even if he is a dad in Knock Knock, the kids are not, like, that's not what that movie's about at all. So, yeah, so that, I don't know that we're going to get it.
I feel like his wheelhouse is really to be, like, some kind of loner, though, like, in so many things.
But do you feel that way because of who he is or just the type of movies that you've seen him in? Because, like, we've never seen him be a dad. Maybe, like, maybe, you know, we've never seen him do really a rom-com. We've seen him do a lot of romance movies. Like, maybe he'd be a great rom-com actor. Well, no, because, I mean, like, we've talked about it before. Like, I emphasize it in that weird way for a reason. Because we talk about, like, Cage did rom-coms and they were great. Keanu just does straight-up romance movies. Like, there's no com in these romance
but
movies.
But he doesn't do that many of those either. Like, what romance movies did he do?
There was a little bit of a stretch.
A Walk
there
in the Cloud. He's going to do The Lake House. Something's Gotta Give is a romance movie.
True.
Sweet November is a romance movie.
Take it back. He did a few.
Another one that was sort of romance-y, or that he, I mean, like, My Own Private Idaho is a romance movie in a way. You know, Much Ado is kind of a romance movie. Dracula has a romance subplot. Winona back from Dracula. Winona will return again in The Private Lives of Pippa Lee, which is just a couple movies down the road. So she's got a trifecta three-timers club here on Keanu. But Keanu's been, and, like, Parenthood's not, like, a romance movie, but, like, his plot there, that's, like, a romance, that's, like, the main driving force there is a romance, so whether it's the plot that he's in or the type of movie, he's done a lot of romance, but he's never done a movie like It Could Happen to You, which I keep referring to because I just love Cage in that movie so, so much, and we just haven't had it. Like, I don't know if he's decided in his mind that he can't do it, or people just never saw him in it, and so they never offered him that.
Leonardo DiCaprio never has kids in movies.
Well, that's because, like, Leonardo DiCaprio is, like, a 45-year-old guy who flies around the planet by himself and just fucks women.
But,
like, that's who he is.
But why couldn't he have kids in a movie? What does that have to do with anything?
I feel like he's on a different, a whole other level, like, a different tier. Like, ever since Titanic, you know, he was just never, he was always the lead or the star, and the movie was sort of crafted around him, and it just seems like he's doing what he wants, not what he's, you know, like, he doesn't have to take jobs. Like, jobs have always just been, like, what he'd wanted.
Yeah, like his Elvis phase.
Not that he couldn't or wouldn't be great in, like, a romantic comedy, but I just feel like he's almost too big for that now. Or,
yeah, no, definitely.
You know, like, it just was in a whole other stratosphere.
And I don't think that what I'm saying about Keanu is necessarily unique to him, because I'm sure there's a lot of actors who never did rom-coms.
That's what I'm getting at.
Cage was so well-rounded. I feel like, you know, the other one that we kind of were really close to doing instead of Keanu was Tom Hanks.
He's been America's dad since he was, like, 20 years old.
We see it time and again, like, Keanu is, like, one of, like, three different roles. And now, I mean, at this point, not even now, like, today, 2017, but now, 2006, A Scanner Darkly, he's already past his prime for, like, rom-coms, I think. It'd be, like, a different kind of, like, an adult, it'd be, like, a Something's Gotta Give, which is just not what I'm looking for.
But so now, wait, now we're talking about two different things, though. You're talking about rom-coms, but we started this out talking about kids, which is two different things.
So I think the kids thing is something that we might see from here on out, but, I mean, I don't know what a lot of these movies coming up are. I don't think he has kids in The Lake House. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have kids in Street Kings, or The Day the Earth Stood Still, or 47 Ronin, or Exposed, I know he doesn't, or John Wick. It just...
But also, we don't want him to need to rescue his kids because they've been kidnapped. Like, we want him, like, you know, like,
yeah,
we want him
Stolen
to, like, sit
so
by the
good.
Fire. It is good, but it's like, I want Keanu to, like, give his kids advice and, you know, go play baseball with them. Not like Hardball, but, like, actually those kind of bonding moments, like, that's what I sort of was considering. I mean, I'll take him in Taken, sure. Like, I'll take that, but I would rather have, like, the family man with Keanu or something. And I also feel like he would be able to pull that off too. I feel like he sort of he could do almost like the clueless dad in a way, or like the dad from Valley Girl, or, you know, like, I feel like he has a dad in him. Like,
I want Keanu in Suspenders. I never thought about it, but I want Keanu in Suspenders.
I watched the beginning of Knock Knock, and I do think his kids are in the beginning, and I was so uncomfortable with him as a dad
I
couldn't watch the rest
of
it. I didn't like
really?
It. It was very uncomfortable.
You didn't like Dad Keanu.
No.
I could have told you that you would not have liked that movie, though, because that movie is just, it's all about him, like, two beautiful 18-year-old girls show up at his house soaking wet and his family's out of town, and, like, they're trying to have sex with him and he's trying not to. Like, that's the whole point of the movie, and it's Eli Roth. Like, I could have told you, like, that's not a Jordan special.
That's an Eli Roth film? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did that, because he did that and he did The Green Inferno, both with Lorenza Izzo, both in, like, the same year, like in 2013, 2014. So he just, you know, he was down in the whole Spanish kick thing, because he has her and then Ana de Armas in that movie, who also comes back in another one. But, like, that's the point of Knock Knock, I guess, is that he has kids and, like, these are basically his daughters and he doesn't want to have sex with them. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Jordan, don't watch Knock Knock.
Well, I tried to already, and it's not for me. I tried.
But it's interesting that you didn't even get to the girl part, though. It was, like, Dad Keanu that was turning her off, right?
No, the girls show up early.
No, well, yeah, I got as far, I think maybe I got to the girls, but, like, it was the Dad Keanu that I was like, I can't, like, I just didn't buy it. It was bad. I didn't like it. So I turned it off.
Well, that's also not a great movie. Like, it's not well written and it's not well acted. I like it because there's two beautiful girls in there.
It's
and
exploitation.
They're just messing with, they're messing with Keanu. Like, it's, that's what I like it, but I mean, I know it's not good, and Chris Mattiello signed up for it to be on this podcast because he knows he's going to hate it and he wants to, like, get mad about it on the air, so we'll get into that. But, like, yeah, I mean, it's just not good, but it's enjoyable if you're into that.
Well, there was one sexy part in this movie that I thought was, well, it wasn't sexy. I don't know. That was a terrible
We have naked Keanu.
That's what I was getting at. We have naked Keanu in this, and it's done in, like, so he's going through the footage of himself, right? Because he's spying on himself, and he's fast forwarding through the sex that he's having, and it reminded me of Clockwork Orange, like when you see Alex have sex and fast forward with the two girls and so. Anyway, it was hilarious too because there's, like, totally full frontal cartoon Keanu in that scene.
And I was wondering, I mean, I'm sure that in the movie, like, when Linklater was filming that, he wasn't naked. They just fixed that in post or whatever.
Why wouldn't he really be naked?
Because it's like, you see everything.
I must have looked down. I don't remember that.
You see the woman comes back to his house and she's like, are you gay? He's like, not, you know, I'm trying not to be. That's why you're here, or whatever. Whatever weird line he has. And then he wakes up and she's dead. And then it zooms out, sort of like, again, The Matrix, like the architect watching himself. And he's just sort of, you know, rewinding and fast forwarding. And, like, he's fast forwarding and, like, the girl, like, he's just sort of, like, around on the bed and he's just fully naked.
Yeah, like, you see him, like, go through the like, that's why it reminded me of Clockwork, because you really see him, like, doing it, like, doggy style the other ways. And, like, they're both naked. And, yeah, that's so... that's why I was like, whoa, this is like very revealing. This is a Keanu we've never seen a side of yet. But that's the beauty of owning the DVD. If you own it, you can just go back and watch that scene. And
well, I can watch this for probably 20 more hours. I'm going to go back and watch that part.
Really?
Nice.
So this movie almost didn't happen, or almost happened in a few different ways. In the 90s, Terry Gilliam wanted to make a motion picture version of this in the early 90s.
Wow, I can see
Charlie
that.
Charlie Kaufman adapted the book into a screenplay.
Whoa.
But ooh, I guess sort of like one. Adaptation, couldn't figure out a workable script. And then he made Being John Malkovich, and that became so successful, he's just like, yeah, whatever, I don't need to do this anymore. And then Richard Linklater wanted to film the Philip K. Dick novel Ubik, or Ubik, U-B-I-K. But then Wiley Wiggins, who was the main character in Waking Life, said, you should do this one instead. And so he did A Scanner Darkly instead.
I did notice in the credits that Soderbergh and Clooney are producers on this. That was interesting because I guess their sensibilities, I don't know. I didn't really think that those two names were going to pop up in the credits, but that was pretty interesting to see.
Yeah. In other filmmaker connections, Linklater will, quote unquote, will return in Side by Side, which is a documentary you watched down the road. He'll also be in 21 Years, which is another one that we bought and we won't be doing. So,
which I watched.
Get ready for 30-second mic reviews in a few episodes, because he'll be back. Because even though he never really works with Keanu again, I guess he's in two documentaries that we almost talked about. So that's interesting.
You guys skipped a lot.
We're skipping a bunch. But like, we're ending 3 months early, but it's way better this way.
And it's stuff I feel like shouldn't have been on the docket in the first place.
No, yeah, for future things, we are not making that same mistake. Like, it's looking back at the Cage stuff when we were going so fast, watching like an 80-minute Johnny Ramone documentary and then talking about it for 20 minutes, was like, whew, I got like a little bit of a break. But here, when we're only doing one a week, we've talked about this on earlier episodes, like, it's a bummer when you do a movie that's not great, but it'd be even more of a bummer if, like, the time you talk about Keanu for the week is, like, him on screen for 2 minutes talking about something. Like, it's just, like, that, there's nothing, that's not, like, when it's a week long, like, that's nothing.
Yeah, I'm so glad I didn't have to pull clips from The Great Warming of him explaining, you know, like, climate change.
The title is sort of a play on a Bible verse. Again, another Matrix comparison from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12, which reads in part, "For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as I am known."
He says the titular line at one point in the movie, too, when he's like wandering through his memories going like, am I a scanner clearly or darkly?
Yep.
I wish that I had cared about that more. I feel like that speech is supposed to be like a thing, and it didn't feel like it.
Yeah. Also, and I'm just looking back through my notes, another thing that just feels weird in retrospect is the Charles Freck thing, where they have like the real, like the guy we start out the movie with, who is taking a shower and the bugs are crawling all over him.
Oh, I like him, the guy from Dazed and Confused and Empire Records.
He wants to kill himself. And he messes up or something, he starts hallucinating, and then, like, this guy comes in to read him a list of all of his sins, and, like, 1,000 years later, or 100 years later, or whatever, they're only up to sixth grade, and that's when he finally learned how to masturbate. It's like Charles Freck thought, at least I got good wine. And, like, that's the last time we see him. Like, it's just, like, a weird, like, hey, we know this film is dark, let's put this weird, trippy, sort of funny, amusing side story in here, otherwise this is gonna get real bleak.
I liked that side story. That was one of the ones that, like, was kind of, I don't want to say fun to go on because he was killing himself, but like, it was a really good use of the animation because this alien comes in. That was actually one of my favorite kind of sidetracks that the movie went on. And I really liked that character animated because his face was really crazy. He looked great animated.
Yeah, I really liked him too. I liked that actor. I liked him in this movie. And I wish there was maybe a few more sidetracks or, you know, offshoots. Like if we followed Woody Harrelson for a scene by himself, just so we could get a sense of how these people operate when they're not in a group. You know, just to see what the dynamic is like a little more, maybe. I did enjoy that because I feel like as much as this movie wants to focus on the Keanu character, like that stuff does, it is heavy and dark and melodramatic at times, and it's the tougher stuff, so it's good to just be lifted every once in a while in between all of the very serious things going on.
Jordan, do you have any other ideas or thoughts or notes about A Scanner Darkly?
Nope.
Mike, do you have anything else that you want to talk about?
just that I would watch more movies in this style, this animation style. I mean, if it was called for, you know, I think that it's cool. I don't know what other story you could tell like this, but I think it works really well for this story. And if there were a reason, I would watch it applied to, you know, another feature too. So I liked it. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, like Waking Life.
I haven't made it through Waking Life. That movie's very different, though.
It's hard to get through.
Actually, my favorite Linklater movie is Slacker, and I think like there's a lot of that in this too, in a lot of different, in sort of more subtle ways maybe, but yeah, so yeah, but I do enjoy that. I would recommend this one.
The art is also similar to cel shaded art, which I guess is kind of cel shaded in a way. I mean, there have been video games in cel shaded art, which has been really cool. That's like the closest thing. I'm trying to think of other things that were rotoscoped, and I can't think of anything. I was just thinking about this one game for original Xbox called 13, which was cel shaded. It wasn't rotoscoped, but it's a similar art style.
Super duper early on, like Disney, they would, not just Disney, but I mean, like everybody would, they would film people and then they would animate over them. Like for Cinderella, if you watch that, like the reason Cinderella looks so human and the mice and everything else looks so cartoony is because she was like an actual actress that they filmed and then they traced over all of her motions, and they did that for tons of movies. You can go on YouTube and check out like the raw footage and stuff sometimes. Sometimes it was just reference, but sometimes they would actually rotoscope.
I'm looking at the list of rotoscoped movies and it's mostly Disney movies.
Makes sense.
But it's a great technique. I mean, it's, you know, it's really cool.
Any other final thoughts about this movie, or are we good?
I'm good.
So Jordan will be back in about 15 episodes for last year's The Neon Demon.
Ooh, that's right, I'm doing that.
I wouldn't call it a Keanu movie, but aside from The Matrix, might be my favorite Keanu movie. But
I love that movie, I know that much.
Yep.
Keanu's in it.
I'll be interested to watch it again, because I wasn't sure the first time, so.
Oh, I loved it.
I know.
And I also met Nicholas Winding Refn and Cliff Martinez. I met them both in person. They both signed my album that I won for free by asking a question about Keanu. Oh, man, what a night that was. Thank you, Jordan. We'll see you back in a couple months for The Neon Demon. I think it's in July sometime. For all things Keanu Club, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or on Twitter @cageclubpod. See all the episodes we've done. You can see the next 3 Keanu episodes coming up next @cageclub.me. You can see all the other shows on our network. We have P.S. I Love Hoffman now in its 2nd month. We've got other things coming this year. So for all things, everything that I just said, cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, Twitter @cageclubpod. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Jordan Pullen Clark, and we'll see you next time on Keanu Club.
What will grow crooked you can't make straight? It's the price that you gotta pay. Do yourself a favor and pack your bags. Buy a ticket and get on the train. Buy a ticket and get on the train. 'Cause this is fucked up.
Anyone want some popcorn?
Yeah.